This is PhotoBizX episode number 333, and today we're talking with South African-based pet photographer Emma O'Brien. She moved to the country, set up her business. She's now averaging $10,000 per month from 10 to 12 sessions per month, where the average freelance photographer in South Africa is only earning $1,000 per month. She shares exactly what she's doing to generate the bookings and build the kind of business she has in today's interview, and that's coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. Can't wait to bring you Emma's interview in just a minute. Before we get into the interview, what I normally do is share a little bit about me and my week, what's been happening. But today it's something different because I had a Facebook private message from a friend of mine, Sydney-based photographer Annie Payne, and she brought up something that I wasn't really aware with. I jumped on a call with her, asked if I could record, and I'm going to bring that interview or phone conversation to you in just a second. I'm really looking forward to hearing your thoughts on what Annie has to share and what she has a bee in her bonnet about. So let's get into that. Following the chat with Annie, we'll take a quick look back at last week's episode. We'll get into the interview with Emma O'Brien, and I've got some news regarding some fantastic specials for premium members following that interview with Emma as well. Of course, it's Black Friday coming up at the end of the month, so that's when all the specials happen. I'm going to be kicking off the month with something extra special for premium members. So if that's you, stick around till after the interview with Emma. If you're listening to the free version of the podcast, your specials will be coming out later in the month in regards to PhotoBizX and how you can get a premium membership at 40% off. All right, here's Annie and our phone conversation. I've got Annie Payne from Milk and Honey Photography on the line at the moment. And Annie, if you aren't familiar with her, is a Sydney-based photographer. She has a business with her husband, Matt. They shoot weddings and portraits. She's been in business for, I think it's over 20 years now. I think certainly longer than me, because she was an influence and certainly a positive influence and a maybe not a mentor, but certainly someone to look up to when I started in the AIPP. I think Annie was the New South Wales president back then. I'm guessing here, but I'm pretty sure she's a multiple master photographer as well. And every time she comes on the show, it's usually as a surprise. And but she always says yes with a smile, and I get beaten up afterwards. But she sent me this text message this morning, or a PM on Messenger, and she says, "Hey Andrew, hope you're well. I just wanted to broach something that has been bothering me since I started in the industry, and I was wondering how we could encourage people to stop calling their office staff the girls. I noticed that you often deliberately ask their names, which is perfect. Even staff members is better. Thank you for setting a positive example. It comes up quite a bit and makes me cringe every time, so I thought I'd let you know." And she goes on to say a couple of other little nice things. So Annie, welcome back to the podcast first up.
Thank you. Hi, Andrew.
did I get all that intro right? You've been shooting for over 20 years, multiple master photographer.
Yes, that was very impressive. Thank you, off the cuff. I noticed you didn't just introduce me as the girl.
I wouldn't dare. So, look, I mean, first of all, I guess, on that topic, is it only male photographers that you hear doing this, or is it female photographers too?
Well, actually, I hear people doing it in lots of different industries, not even just the photography industry, and it probably does come from men and women. And, you know, it's a generalization, I think, that people use. But, yes, specifically in the photography industry, it happens. And I think, you know, as you said, I've been around for over 20 years. And when I came into the industry 20 years ago, it was a very male-dominated industry. It was known as a boys' club, and, you know, it was very unusual to be a female photographer, really, in the industry back then. So I think that we've come a long way in 20 years, but I feel like some of the language around the way that people talk about their staff and people that they work with, you know, makes me cringe that language hasn't changed very much.
Do you cringe when you hear a female business owner saying it as well as a male, or is it mainly the males that you notice?
Yeah, no, I cringe when females say it as well, you know, and I think that the two things that stand out or specifically about what we're talking about is when people are describing their business and they say, or when they're being introduced and they're like, you know, they work with their wife and then when they go on to talk about the girls in the office or the girls at the front desk or the girls in production, that's specifically what we're talking about. So I noticed that when you introduced me today, you said, you know, Annie works with her husband, Matt, so you used his name, which is really nice. But often, and, you know, having, and the fact that he's my husband, that's great that that's referenced, but often people don't say the name and they just say, you know, they work with their wife, which implies a certain type of way that they work, and to me it also belittles the job of the wife or the girls. You know, it's like we all know that those people who are working in the team in the business are really quite probably the ones that are running the crux of the business and you know, doing some really important work. So to be labeling them with those titles, I think just doesn't give them, you know, the justice that they deserve.
So when I introduced you and I talked about Matt, your husband, if I had just said your husband works in the business as well, does that send the wrong message, do you feel?
Yeah, I think if you had said, oh, you know, Annie works with her husband, or, you know, Annie's husband's in the business as well, like it's not really giving him a visual as a person. I think that my 12-year-old son often pulls me up on these things when we're describing people as far as, you know, racial differences and age differences and all these kind of things. It's really important to, first of all, put the person first. And so you're giving them a bit of credit for who they are rather than giving them a label that conjures up maybe a different idea of who they are.
Is this specific to certain nationalities or does it apply right across the board? Do you hear it from all different people?
I don't really see it in the context of nationalities. I think this language is more about a gender, kind of gender-based equality.
Okay. I mean, I'm sort of diving in little bits and pieces, just trying to get to the actual crux of the issue, if there is an issue. And it sounds like there is. I mean, so for me, and the reason I ask you about nationalities, I notice, and I'm probably going to get shot down for this, but I notice when people from the US, Americans, are talking about even their spouse or their partner, they tend to say he or she a lot more, whereas I would always use someone's name. So I don't know if that's something that's built into the way we're brought up or the language within our countries. Have you noticed that with Americans as opposed to Australians?
Yeah, there might be different cultural ways that people talk about others. But I think in this specific example and where I got, you know, where I do cringe is when people are talking about in their studios specifically, for example. So it might be like, oh yeah, so I do the shooting and the girls do the production and the sales, you know. So instead of saying the girls do the production and the sales, we could say, well, Felicity is the sales manager and Amanda is the production assistant, or the staff members even, you know, like just to be pinpointing them down to the girls just gives, it really belittles who they are and makes the visual of it could be anyone in there, they could be doing anything, they could be young, old or whatever. You're just not giving them any personality or credibility for who they are.
It's almost like they're expendable when you label them that way.
Yeah, and I think it's respectful to be called, you know, your title of your job title or your name. You know, it's really not that much harder than the girls, and I just don't think that it would be said the other way around very often. Like you wouldn't kind of go and his husband and the boys in the office. Like you probably wouldn't do that. It's more common to hear the girls because you know, traditional roles in the past, you might have a receptionist that more often would be female and that kind of thing. But I think that we need to really move away from that kind of language. And that's why, you know, titles have changed over the years as well, where job titles are given more credibility and more respect. And I think if we can follow that through into the way that we think about our businesses and the people that work for us, then I think that's really important.
Yeah. Look, I agree with you, but when you made that last point, I'm thinking, well, I've got mates, a good mate of mine's a landscaper, or he has as a garden maintenance business, and he has three guys working for him, and he often refers to them as the boys. So I don't know if this is specific to women. Are you being too sensitive?
Well, I know there's a tendency to say, oh, you know, she's being so sensitive, or we're too PC these days and all of that kind of thing. But I think that, you know, if it makes you cringe, if you're listening to an interview and the people in the interview are referring to the girls in the offices, the girls, and talking about them in that way, and it's making you cringe, then I think there's a problem, and that I'm not being oversensitive, because it's making me cringe for that, how I would feel if I was them, or how that they're being perceived in that conversation. So I think it's okay to be sensitive about that.
Yep, true. Okay, so how do we fix it? What do we do? Is it just a point of making people aware, or?
Yeah, I mean, this is why I said something to you, because I felt uncomfortable about that. I almost put it on the PhotoBiz Facebook page, where I thought, oh, I don't want to, you know, pinpoint Andrew. I don't want to embarrass anyone. I don't want to be that person going, oh, she's so oversensitive. So that's why I like sent you the message, because you're an influencer. You know, you're in that great position where you can really change people's thoughts on that. And I hear you doing that in the interview. I hear you saying, oh, what is their name? You know, so I'm like, I just wanted to thank you for genuinely doing that and to think about that, because if you're thinking about that and you're steering people who are talking like that away from speaking about their staff members like that, then that's how culture changes.
It's funny you say that, because I mean, I consciously ask their names, but I don't think it's for the same reason. Maybe it is. To me, I think, well, if I was one of those staff members listening back to this interview, and it's likely that they're going to at some stage, I would love to hear my name mentioned and be thanked and talked about for the role that I play in that business and that person's success, because that's usually why they're on the show in the first place. So I think I don't know, I think I have a habit of putting myself in the shoes of the person that I'm interviewing, or that I'm recording for, or that might be listening to the show. I put myself in their shoes and think, how would they feel? That might be the way to approach this, and for other listeners to think about it if they have staff and they do talk about their staff.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it, definitely.
I mean, so the first person that came to my mind when you were talking about staff and having female staff on the other side, I remember Michael Chetham used to have a male assistant, studio assistant. And so do you think he would say the same thing? Or if he did, would you notice?
Matthew's saying he remembers that Michael always used his name.
Oh, did he? Okay, that's interesting. Right. Okay. So,
well, he wouldn't call in the girls, would he? So I don't know. I guess then you're forced to think about changing the way that you say it. Yeah, I think that it's hard when the people in the office are all female. Maybe, you know, it's the same if you've got all female children as well. I think then that parents would say the girls. But I just think it's a bit of a derogatory term, the way that it's used in that context. And the wife as well, you know, like.
That sounds very Aussie, doesn't it? The wife.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. And look, I'm on the same page. And again, if I place myself in the position of one of those staff members listening back to an interview, or even my boss talking about me and my role to someone else, I want them to reference me by my name and what I do, my title. I totally agree with you. I'm looking forward to sharing this with listeners and getting their feedback. Let's talk about it inside the members Facebook group. I'll make sure that you're tagged, Annie, so you can jump in there and keep making your point and fighting for what you believe in, which you always do, which is awesome. You have a son and a daughter, don't you?
Yes, we do.
So do you call them the kids?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we do call them the kids, yeah.
So is that different?
Yeah, well, it's not gender specific to say the kids the same as like the staff, you know, so, but also it depends on the conversation as well. Like if I'm talking about something they've done or something, you know, specific. I would use their names. I do think that, you know, that's quite different to talking about staff members who, you know, people who work for you that are doing amazing sales and making your business successful. You know, that's quite different to talking about your children. So it's not every situation is very different.
Hey, I know you're a part of a mastermind group. Have you guys discussed that or this topic in the group?
No, but I'm sure it'll come up now.
I bet you if they're – who's in your group? Is it it's Ian and Jacob? Ian Sim, Jacob –
Top secret,
oh, sorry,
Andrew.
Sorry. Beep.
No, I'm only joking. Ian and Jacob and Linda and Kaylee, and it's amazing. Like, we have been meeting every single week for 2 years, more than 2 years. We hardly ever – miss a week. It's just incredible what that has done, and we give you credit for getting us set up with that. That's just been amazing.
Oh, that's so good. That is so good. Two years every week. That's amazing. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I bet you now, if they're hearing this before they've spoken to you, they're thinking, "Oh my God, have I got staff? What do I call them when I'm talking to Annie?"
No, they're all awesome. They're all over it. It's all good. We have gender equality in our mentoring group.
Just on a slightly different topic, do you follow or listen to Jordan Peterson?
No, I don't.
Have you heard of him on YouTube? So he's all about he talks a lot about gender equality or inequality, and it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on him when you have a chance to have a listen to one or two of his videos.
Yeah.
Cool, Annie. Look, this has been great. Thanks for saying yes to recording this. I know that caught you a little bit unawares, and I appreciate you contacting me as well and sharing your thoughts, because it's cool to get this stuff out there and chat about it.
It is, and I really appreciate you doing that as well. Yeah, you could have just ghosted me, and, you know, we could have just pretended I didn't see that message, but that was good. to talk about these things and change the world one step at a time.
Absolutely. Hey, Annie, if I don't talk to you before, have a fantastic Christmas. Say hi to Matt, and I hope you have an amazing busy season, which I guess you're right in the middle of now.
Yeah, thank you so much. You too, have a fantastic break.
Alrighty, that was Annie and me chatting. I'd love to hear your thoughts on what Annie has to share. Are you guilty of referring to your staff as the girls if you have staff? Or have you noticed other guests on the podcast or other photographers, maybe inside Facebook groups that you're a member of, referring to their staff as the girls? Have you seen photographers referring to male staff as the boys? Or is Annie making a big fuss about nothing, and this isn't even on your radar? It's not something that we have to worry about. Whatever your thoughts, whatever your position on this is, I'm keen to hear or read about them. I'm sure Annie is too. Leave a comment in the comments area of the show notes, and you can find them this week at photobizx.com/333. Or if you're a premium member, let's chat about it inside the members Facebook group. Feel free to tag Annie if you are a member, and let's get the conversation rolling on this topic.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
In last week's episode of the podcast, I interviewed underwater photographer Brett Stanley, and what a creative master this guy is. I just love what he creates, and I love the fact that he has mermaids as clients. That was so cool. But, you know, there was more to his business, his photography, that interview, than his creativity and what he does for his clients. There's a business behind the photography. And maybe I was a little tough in saying that Brett was lazy with his business. I think it was him that used those words. I used it in an email and also as a title for last week's interview. But really, he may describe himself as lazy. To me, I see that as a lifestyle choice, and I'm sure Brett does too. I mean, I'm sure he was a bit tongue-in-cheek when he called himself lazy. I'm sure he's anything but lazy. Could he have a more successful, well, a more profitable business? Yeah, I think so. And I think any photographer or photography business coach listening to Brett would agree that, yes, he could be making a ton more money from his business, from his creativity, from his vision, and what he does, but he chooses not to because he loves the lifestyle that he's created around his photography business. Anyway, do you agree? You know, am I on track? Is Brett doing the right thing? Or is there a right or wrong way to run a photography business if the person behind the business has the lifestyle that they want? Keen to hear your thoughts on that one too. Leave a comment in the comments area or let's chat about it inside the members group. If you haven't heard that interview with Brett, make sure you get back and have a listen. And please have a look at his incredible work as well.
You're listening to the number one photography business podcast with Andrew Helmich, photobizx.com.
We are going to jump into this interview with Emma O'Brien in just a second. If you are hearing this announcement, it does mean you are listening to the free version of the podcast. And all that means is you're going to be missing out on a large portion of the second half of the interview with Emma. And it's in the second half that we dive deeper into the strategies and tactics behind her photography business. So how she's attracting the kind of client she is, what she's doing to generate repeat business, how she's doing her selling, which she does in the client's homes in most cases because of the clients that she's servicing. So basically, we go into the nitty-gritty of how she's been able to generate 10 times more income than most South African-based photographers. So if you would like to hear the full interview with Emma today, you can do that for as little as $1 by heading over to the URL photobizx.com/try. And for $1, you can sign up, get a 30-day trial membership. You get full access to the interview today with Emma. You can access the full back catalog. You'll get an invite to the incredible members Facebook group for PhotoBizX members. I'll help you get started in your very own mastermind group, and you will be on your way to building a more successful photography business for yourself. I'm going to help you do that by getting the best information, the best tactics, the best strategies that are working right now, photobizx.com/try.
Welcome to another great eye for business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest is Emma O'Brien, a British-born photographer living and working in South Africa. Her niche is dog photography, and in a challenging economy, she's managed to build a successful and profitable business, averaging $10,000 a month from 10 to 12 shoots. As a reference, the average freelance photographer in South Africa earns $1,000 per month. Now, Emma does a combination of commercial work and private client shoots. And in addition to her portrait photography business, Emma is a Nikon South Africa school trainer. She also mentors other photographers on a one-on-one basis and via more structured workshops in collaboration with Nikon. And once I learned about the business she'd built in such a tough market, I knew she'd make a great guest for us. I'm rapt to have her with us now. Emma, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
It sounds like you are living a busy and exciting life in South Africa. What's taking up most of your time in regards to business? Is it the Nikon stuff or your portraits?
So it's mostly the portrait photography at the moment. And obviously you touched on the business mentoring, which has been something I started in January. So I've been gradually building that in as well. And then I have a house full of animals as well. So life is usually pretty chaotic.
Before I hit record, you were telling me that you have 6 dogs and a parrot.
Yep. 6 dogs and a parrot.
Why do you have 6 dogs?
Why do I have 6 dogs? Well, I do quite a lot of work with animal shelters. So I think once you start getting into the world of animal rescue, you end up taking stuff home. So yeah, so I've kind of gradually accumulated more and more dogs as time's gone on. So my fiance has put a cap on it at 6, and I think I've been threatened with I'll be evicted if I bring any more dogs home.
I don't blame them for placing that limit there. I would have done it well before 6.
Yeah. The last 2 that came in were an accident. So I volunteered to bottle feed 3 puppies that had been orphaned, and we got them at 2 days old. And I said to him, I promise I'm going to rehome them all. And then as they got bigger and I got more attached to them, I managed to rehome one of them, and we still have the other 2. And they went from like 450 grams to nearly 30 kilograms now.
Oh my goodness. So,
it's chaos all the time.
Wow. So I'm guessing you don't do home-based shoots with the other pets.
I've got a studio at home, but it's kind of sort of contained. We've got a bit of a basement, so it's contained there. So it's just a little bit of logistics management when I've got other people coming through with dogs. So mine are all kind of tucked away. So we sort of just about managed to do it. So.
Okay, before we dive into the full business side of things, how did you end up in South Africa and as a photographer there?
So I moved to South Africa in 2009 with the boyfriend I was with at the time. So he was also British and he got a job here. So I got divorced and I had a small daughter. So it was kind of an opportunity for a fresh start. So we moved out here and I just loved it here. And that relationship ended in 2012 and I stayed here. So it was one of those things, very interesting kind of moving countries because it's obviously very different from the UK. And I think it's just, I like it here. There's lots of open space. The weather is obviously much better. And the people here are amazing and really friendly. And I just kind of, it fitted for me.
Nice.
So I'm very happy here.
So were you a photographer back in the UK or did that all start here in South Africa?
No, I started my photography career in the UK in 2004 and I actually started photographing weddings. I'd gone to college and to do a diploma in photography. And at the time, obviously, 2004 is quite a long time ago. We were doing darkroom stuff back then. And one of the other girls on my course was doing a bit of work for a local photography studio. And she said, oh, you know, this guy needs more people to go and shoot weddings for him. So I said, cool, I'll do that. So I went out and I shot two. These were very low value weddings, just to say two. I shot two weddings for him. And then I thought, I think I can probably do this. So I just set the business up and started.
Just like that.
Which was interesting.
I can imagine. So how long were you doing that in the UK before you moved to South Africa?
So 5 years in the UK I was shooting weddings for before I moved here.
Okay. So just before we get into the South African side of your business, where in South Africa are you?
I'm in Centurion, which is halfway between Pretoria and Johannesburg.
Right. Okay. And give me an idea and the listener an idea of the demographic of your clientele and the local area.
So it's quite a difficult one with South Africa because obviously it's an economy with an incredibly huge demographic of people who earn probably $5 a day. You know, there's a huge rich and poor divide here. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the other extreme here with the people who drive around in Ferraris. So it's a very interesting sort of economy. So I'm working with, you know, I do a lot of pet photography now, so I don't shoot weddings here. So I've got, I guess it's sort of difficult to describe. You've kind of got a middle class demographic here, I suppose, that I'm working with.
So most of your clients would be doctors, lawyers, that kind of clientele?
Absolutely. Doctors, lawyers, architects, those sort of people. So I guess they're people that are earning well here and can afford to commission photography.
Right. Okay.
For sure.
Okay. So you moved from the UK, you've been shooting weddings, you come to South Africa and it's a whole new country.
Yep.
Did you start your photography business immediately and how did you start it?
So I was quite lucky when I arrived. So the boyfriend I came here with, he was a software programmer. So we had a very well-paid job here. So I wasn't under any pressure to have to go out and do work. And I also at that time didn't have a permit to enable me to go out and do work. So I just kind of started making contacts with people, networking with people. And I started doing quite a bit of charity work because I had time on my hands and I'm quite philanthropic. So it's always been a bit of an underlying theme of my photography is wanting to use my work to make a difference in the world. So when I arrived here, I had that perfect opportunity. So I started to get involved with my local SPCA, the animal shelter. I went and adopted a dog and I said to them at the time, you know, look, I'm a photographer. How can I help you? So I volunteered to help them shoot a fundraising calendar. And that's something we the first one came out in 2012 and we've got the 2021 is being launched shortly. So that's a project that's raised an awful lot of money. I'm just trying to think, putting it into dollars, that's probably raised about $75,000.
Wow.
In the last, how many years is that? 7 years. So it's been a really cool project to be a part of. And then obviously through that, I started to pick up pet photography work. So the pet photography was a total accident when I arrived here. And then I managed to get a business permit. So then I just sort of gradually set the business up here. Now, just one thing to say is I decided not to shoot weddings when I arrived here because I actually got to the point where I really despised shooting them. I know you shoot weddings, and I've seen your works. I've been through your website. Your work's really beautiful. And I got to the point with it in the UK, it was very difficult because obviously the weather's very hit and miss. So you'd go to a wedding at a beautiful venue and then it would start to rain. And then everybody looks at you like you're going to perform a miracle. And actually, I just got to the point where I thought, you know what, I actually really am not enjoying the pressure here. So I was getting very frustrated because you've got, you know, a lovely venue with beautiful grounds, and then you can't go outside because it's raining. And I'm thinking, you know what, actually, I'm not enjoying going out every weekend and doing this. So I decided to focus on portrait photography when I got here. So that was kind of the niche I decided to go in.
So that was kids and families or pets?
Yes. Yeah, so I started off when I arrived here, I started off doing kids and families, so maternity and newborn, family shoots. And then once I started doing the SPCA work and then ended up very accidentally photographing animals and realizing I had a bit of a talent for it, I went down the road with that niche. So the majority of my work now is clients who have dogs. So, you know, a lot of the time it's just photos of the dogs. And then I'll have people who'll come to me who are having a baby and they've got dogs and they want to have the dogs included in their newborn shoot. So it's just kind of, it's built very interestingly around this concept of the fact people like that their dogs can be included, and then we build the rest of the family in around it.
Nice. Okay, so dogs are really your specialty. That's why people are coming to you today.
Yes. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, I want to dive into, you know, how you've built the business that you have. But, you know, in the intro there, I mentioned that you're earning, you know, around $10,000 a month, whereas most photographers in South Africa are earning $1,000.
Yep.
Why is there such a huge difference? Why is there that big chasm between you and these other photographers?
I think here, you know, we've touched on that there's a very big kind of earning gap here across the board in the country. And I think this is a country that South Africa sort of seems to really undervalue creatives and undervalue people who provide a service. There's the expectation that because you're providing a service and not necessarily something tangible, that it shouldn't have to cost very much. And I think a lot of people are schooled into this, that they've got to be as cheap as possible, otherwise nobody will book them. And I started off, when I arrived here, I started off being very, very cheap to build my business. And my business model that I bought here was the same that I've been using in the UK. And I think it's similar with the States, and probably very similar in Australia, of this model of charging a shoot fee and then upselling clients with prints and products.
Yes.
So is that what you do as well? Yes. With your work?
Yeah, I think that's popular right around the world.
Yeah. It wasn't popular here and it still isn't. It's quite interesting. So the expectation here for the majority of people is they book a shoot and they get all the digital files.
Right. So you have to charge a hefty fee up front for them to be happy. Is that right?
Well, yes. But what photographers are doing here is charging a very low rate and just giving all the files away.
Right.
That's sort of the done thing. So I've come in with my overseas model, and it's taken a while to sort of educate my clients about the fact that they're going to pay a fee and then they're going to get stuff, they're going to get their work printed.
Okay. So you're still using the UK model and you're helping your clients to see that's the way you work.
Yes. That's it. So often, I mean, it's got easier for me over time because I've been here for 10 years now. So it's got easier over time. But when I first started, it was very alien to people. And I was getting, you know, and I was starting with this very low shoot fee and then upselling to something, you know, that was sort of sometimes 10 or 20 times what the initial shoot fee was. And actually, I did that for a while. And I got to the point where I was probably doing 25 shoots a month, which is exhausting. And it's very hit and miss when you charge a low shoot fee and rely on upselling people, that you don't always upsell people. So sometimes I'd get lucky with it and sometimes I didn't. So my income for you know, to start with was totally fluctuated. And actually I'd got to the point of, it was the end of 2015, and I'd got to the point where I was working 24/7 and I was doing all of these shoots, and you know, the income was not where I wanted it to be or where it should have been for the amount of work I was doing. And I actually got to the point where I thought, you know what, I've actually had enough of this now, because it's not a sustainable business model. And at that point, I actually started working with a business coach, and we went through my pricing model and basically doubled the initial shoot fee I was charging and took kind of a lot of the product offering out of that. We because her rationale, which is the same thing I would say to my own clients, is that you've got to have a base shoot fee for every shoot you do, that if your client doesn't spend any extra, you're fine.
Right.
And you've got enough money from that shoot, rather than banking on them spending a load more. Because I think also if you're charging quite a cheap shoot fee, you've got clients who are like, oh, well, that's cool. I only have to spend X amount. So it can be quite difficult to upsell people who are not expecting to have to buy more. So yeah, it was quite an interesting, I had to really kind of rejig my business model with that.
Where was your business mentor based? Was she South African or from the UK?
No, so she's a British photographer. Her name's Polly Alexander. So she was a photographer turned coach. So it was actually quite interesting working with her. And I like the fact that she'd been down the same path as me.
What, in South Africa?
No, so she's UK based. She sort of works, she's a bit of a digital nomad now. But I knew she'd had a model of kind of running a successful photography business in the UK. So it was actually really helpful to work with her to get my business really kind of a lot more streamlined here.
When you first hired her and she started telling you that you have to double your prices and you need to change the way you're doing things, were you coming in with the answer, well, hang on, this is South Africa, it's different here?
Yeah, a little bit. I was sort of said to her, you know, I don't know if I can do that because I don't know if people are going to pay that. And obviously, I knew I'd had some people who were spending kind of $500-$600 on extras from their shoot. So I knew it was possible. It wasn't like I hadn't done it at all. It's just, it was possible on a very hit and miss kind of, you know, cross your fingers and hope these people buy more. So the possibility was there. So it wasn't a total kind of total uncharted territory. It was just the fact of putting the shoot fee up. So it was actually pretty high. It was quite terrifying. So when we first did it, I sat for 6 weeks with no bookings.
Right.
And I had lots of inquiries and I sent stuff out and I'd have people say, oh, no, it's far too expensive. And I remember sitting thinking, this woman has killed my business. It's over.
I bet you did.
I'm done. But it was also, I was at the point where I thought, I actually don't want to go back to charging what I was charging because I wasn't making enough money. And it was just kind of, the whole thing was miserable. So, and she was saying to me, you know, you just got to sit tight and work on your mindset and get yourself into a place where you actually believe in the worth of what you're charging. And then I kid you not, like literally 6 weeks after I'd put these prices up, I got 3 bookings in one day.
Wow. That's strange.
Yeah.
And nice.
Yeah.
And what was the, do you have a reason why that happened or that was just luck of the stars?
I think it was luck of the stars. I think it was just riding it out and just being persistent and trusting that kind of it was the right thing to do because I knew I needed to take my business in that direction. Because actually also there was the thought of I can stay where I'm at and nothing's going to change.
That's right.
And I think also part of it, I got quite frustrated because I was doing a huge amount of work for, you know, not really enough money. And the creativity had gone for me. You know, there was no time to plan shoots. I wasn't, you know, I was some weekends I'd do 4 shoots on a Saturday, which is ridiculous. And you're running, you're just kind of running from one to the other and everything's packed in. And it was just totally, it was completely stressful. And of course, there's no time to sit and be present with clients and take the time to kind of talk to them and really let a shoot evolve. Because I think it's quite important to do that. So obviously the creativity had kind of gone for me. And I think that's so important as a photographer. You know, we all start our businesses because we like taking pictures. I don't think anyone starts a photography business and thinks, oh, this is an easy way to make money. Because we all know it's not the easiest way to earn a living necessarily.
That's right.
But we do it because we love being creative. And I think it's so important that we nurture that creativity within a business because that is what makes your work desirable for clients.
Yeah, I agree. What were you charging before you hired, was it Polly?
Yes, Polly. Yeah, Polly.
What were your prices before?
So I was charging 1,950 Rand for a shoot, which works out that's probably about $120.
Right, okay. And then what did you put your prices up to?
I put my prices up to 3,500 Rand. We'll have to do some maths.
Yeah, okay. So 220 or 30 roughly.
Yep. Yeah. But what I was including with the 1,950 Rand shoot, I had this, I don't know quite why I've done it like I did it. I had this model where I included 750 Rand in credit for a client to spend on product. So I was actually including an awful lot there. I didn't give the digital files away. But that was a difficult one because people were booking me and I was quite, you know, it wasn't, I guess it's not, wasn't kind of totally cheap, but they were booking and they're like, oh, can I get that? Why don't I get the digital files? So it was very, I had a few clients, you know, kind of it all got a bit sticky because I wasn't being very clear with my pricing either. And then we put it up to 3,500 rand and literally all that I included with that was 5 A5 prints.
Right. Okay. So quite small. Okay. Is that what your prices are today?
No, my price is now a 5,500 rand they start at for a shoot.
Right. And what do they get for that?
So for that, they get a small book with 20 photos in and one A4 canvas included with that. So I've sort of upped the prices and then just added a bit more value for the clients.
Okay. So, and these days, do most clients add on top of that?
Yeah, most clients add on top of that. And then I've got an incentive, my top package, which is 9,500 rand. I include the digital files with that. So effectively, you're sort of incentivizing people to spend more because they get a hell of a lot more with the top package.
Okay, so you're still running packages. You just have a base price of 5,500. Yep. Right, okay.
Yeah. And then lots of people kind of deviate from them, which is fine. And then I'll just kind of package everything up as a quote. Because I also do framing and wall art and that sort of thing as well. So it kind of, I've tried to accommodate people as much as possible, but at the same time, encouraging them to make sure they've got printed products from their shoots.
Right. Okay. Yes. Okay. So just for the listener to make this easy, if you're playing around with these numbers, if you just take a zero off the South African rand, it'll convert to Aussie dollars pretty close. So
there we go.
You're basically charging perfect. $550 now.
Yeah.
Aussie for a shoot. That's right, isn't it?
I think so. Sounds about right.
Good. Okay. When I introduced you, I was talking about, you know, how the successful business you have compared to other photographers.
Yeah.
Do you feel that's because of your pricing or because of the people you're attracting? Why do you think you're having the success you are?
I think it's because the pricing, because I'm not giving everything away for next to nothing. I think also, you know, having done quite a lot of self-development work, I think one then kind of stands quite strong in the value of what I'm offering. You know, I've got clients who have been with me since I was charging, you know, 195 Aussie dollars and are now still with me when I'm charging 550 Aussie dollars. So they know, you know, because that's a huge discrepancy really for over the course of 3 years for the prices to have gone up. I mean, sure. that's a huge price increase. But I think it's also the fact that the clients I work with know the value they're getting. They know I'm going to pitch up on time. They know my work's going to be consistently good, you know, and they kind of know and trust what they're getting. And I think for a lot of photographers, kind of, again, especially in South Africa, are schooled into thinking they have to give as many files as possible to their clients. Otherwise, they won't book them. And a lot of it is a mindset thing here, I think.
So what are you supplying your clients? What are they getting as far as number of photos or files from you?
So the clients I'm working with are getting, they're getting printed product with kind of a set number of pictures in. So the first package starts with a book with 20 photos in. And then the top package I offer is a book with 50 photos and all the digital files. So the more they spend, the more they get.
Sure. But how many photos would you be shooting on a session? And how many would they see that they could possibly get if they take the top package?
So on a session, I tend to go for quality over quantity. So for an average family shoot session, I'll probably end up with 60 to 80 pictures that I'll show a client and then they can select from there.
Great. And are you shooting, is it, because I can see a mixture of studio and outdoor. So do you do both or in home?
I do. Yeah. So I've obviously got my studio at home. It's quite a small studio. So I tend to use that. That's great for dogs and it's great for, you know, like a family of three. But I prefer if I've got more people and we're doing a bigger family shoot to work outdoors. You know, we've got so many beautiful spaces here. It's kind of silly not to, really.
Okay. Now, I don't want to offend you with this question or anyone from South Africa, but is it dangerous to shoot outside?
That is a very good question. So you've got to be vigilant here. That is what I will say. So I take people to, there's a really, really great big park called Delta Park that's here. We'll go on a weekend, mid-afternoon. It's pretty, you know, it's busy enough that there are people around. You've just got to be vigilant here.
Are you being vigilant for wild animals or for humans?
No, it's more criminals.
Right. Okay, I just wanted to be clear.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, vigilant for criminals, unfortunately.
Okay, so do you have to have someone there with you watching, or you and your families are just vigilant?
You know, I'm vigilant when I'm working on a shoot. Obviously, I'm in the middle of a park with really expensive camera equipment. So it's just, I go to parks that are kind of well populated in relatively safer areas. Usually if we've got a family, there'll be me and there'll be a bunch of people and usually some dogs, which is always helpful. I'm not a person who's horribly negative about South Africa. And I think you tend to the vibe you give out generally kind of attracts what you get back. So I just kind of have a positive outlook on it. And I say, just being vigilant, all my kit's insured.
Right.
So the fact is, if somebody came and wanted to steal it, I would, you know, hand it over. So,
sure.
But I don't think you can live your life worrying about things like that all the time, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever had any sticky situations?
Touch wood, no.
Great, nice. Good, nice. Look, I'm going to come back to the pricing and your pet and family photography business, but
yep.
I just want to make sure I'm not missing a vital part of your business here, because I mentioned that you do some commercial work as well. Does that play a big part in your business?
It's a reasonable part. It's not the huge part of it. So the commercial work is probably 10% of my actual business income. So I've got a couple of commercial dog clients that I've got. There's an insurance company, a dog food company. I've done a shoot for Land Rover South Africa here. They had a pet range. So a kind of the commercial work kind of comes in fits and starts. So it's a good part of it. And it's something that actually the more time has gone on, the more commercial work I'm getting.
Right.
I think that's always the way, isn't it? When you do work for one kind of big company, people see and they're like, oh, okay, well, if that company hired her, then she must be good, you know? So I think it's building.
Yes. Cool. Okay. You mentioned earlier that some of your clients have been with you for, you know, the last few years. They keep coming back.
Yeah.
What are you doing to encourage them to come back?
I think it's just a case of, you know what, they like working with me. They enjoy the experience of working with me. And I think it's just that.
Emma, this has been so much fun. Where is the best place for the listener to see examples of your work and learn more about you and what you do and also your mentoring?
Yes. So there are a few websites. So the photography website is emmaobryan.com. The mentoring website is mentoringforcreatives.com. I'm on Instagram at Emma O'Brien Photo. On Facebook, it's at Emma O'Brien Photos, or if you put in emmaobryan.com, it'll come up. And I've also got the Mentoring for Creatives Facebook page as well. So there are a few places for people to find me in the photography capacity or in the business mentoring capacity.
Fantastic. Look, I'll add links to all those in the show notes to accompany this audio. With the Mentoring for Creatives, is that one-on-one? Is that group coaching or online? What is that?
So it's one-on-one mentoring that I'm doing at the moment. So obviously I've got, you know, kind of clients can be all over the world. So much like we're doing today, I do sessions via Skype with a video call so I can kind of see people. And then we can just sit for an hour a week and just work through whatever that particular photographer is looking to up-level and change in their own business.
Fantastic. That's awesome. All right, look, I'll have links to all those in the show notes to accompany the audio.
Sorry. We managed nearly an hour without that happening.
I can't believe they've been quiet for this long. So who was that and where was he or she? Are they in the room with you?
That was Hazel, who is a very small, she's about 5 kilograms, a chihuahua mix, who's just emerged from her little bed in the corner here.
So where are the other 5 dogs and parrot?
So there's another one to the right of my desk here. The naughty dogs have been shut away with bones to chew on in another room, and the parrot is in another room, and I think the other 2 dogs are sleeping somewhere else, thankfully.
Nice. Hey, totally unrelated, but for any photographer that's listening that wants to go to South Africa to go and photograph the amazing animals that you do have there, have you done that and do you recommend it, or do you have any advice or tips?
If this is the place to come on safari, if you want to see elephants and rhino and all of the wonderful creatures we've got here, you're going to need a very big lens, obviously, for your wildlife photography.
So 300 mil or longer?
Yes, or more, depending on. So I've got a funny story about a big long lens. So I went on safari. I had a friend visit from the UK, probably about 5 years ago now. And we went to one of the national parks here. And obviously I'm shooting portraits. So I've just got my portrait lenses, which aren't really very good for wildlife photography, particularly. So I hired myself a 200 to 400 telephoto lens. And this thing was like a ground to air missile launcher. And it was like stupendously heavy. And I'm a very small human. If you see me, so this lens was nearly as big as me. So I'm carting this lens around and I'm a pretty impatient person when it comes to taking pictures. So I say to my friend, John, we'll go into one of these hides here for a minute and we can go and see. But you know what? Sitting in hides is so boring. We won't stay there for very long. So we're sitting in this hide and I've got this great big long lens and we see in the distance an elephant arriving and this hide was by a big dam. And I'm like, oh, I've got my long lens. This is great. I can frame up this elephant that's miles away. And then this elephant got into the water and kind of swam through the dam and ended up like right outside the hide. And then another one appeared. Wow. And I actually had to go and run back to the car to go and get one of my portrait lenses because the 200 to 400 lens was impossible because the elephant was right in front of me.
Wow. So hang on, is that a dangerous situation? Like, can you just run back to the car with an elephant there?
So the car park is, well, the elephant could come into the car park, but he was the other side. The car park was at the back of the hide. So it was relatively okay. So the elephant couldn't get to me. And obviously in a hide, they can't really see you, but you wouldn't want to stick your hand out or, you know, try and climb out or anything like that. So obviously they're wild animals and they have the potential to be quite dangerous.
But yeah.
It was quite entertaining. So we have a standing joke of, oh yeah, hides, they're really boring. See, this, so the wildlife here is just amazing.
Wow. So do you actually get out there much yourself or, you know, is that like, would that be like me going on a big holiday to Ayers Rock, you know, which I haven't done, which is sounds terrible, but is that what it's like for you though, living in Africa?
Yeah, you know, most of the national parks are a sort of 2 to 4 hour drive away. So it's not really very far at all. And no, I haven't been this year. I think I went last year. So I don't go nearly as often as I should because it's really relaxing to be able to go and hang out in nature and go and watch these animals. And I don't do it nearly often enough. So, and often I'm terrible when I do go on safari is I generally don't take pictures. I actually quite enjoy having a holiday and not having my camera in my hand.
Just watching, just looking.
Just watching. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Emma, look, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing everything you have. It's been a real pleasure for me.
Thank you very much. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And thank you for giving me the time and inviting me onto the podcast.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Emma as much as I did. Emma, if you're listening, again, thank you so much for coming on and sharing everything you did. I love the way you've built the kind of business that you have in a new country and so successfully as well. So yeah, a massive thanks for coming on and sharing everything you did. For you, the listener, I hope you did get as much as I did from Emma. I know that she would love to hear about your takeaways. Was there something that she shared that you thought, yes, absolutely, I can do that. I can implement that in my business. In fact, I'm going to. And if there is, let me know, let Emma know in the comments area for today's episode. And you can find them in the show notes at the very bottom if you go to photobizx.com/333. Now in those show notes, I've got links to anything and everything that Emma mentioned, including her coaching program. You can see examples of her beautiful work. It's all there in the show notes.
You're listening to Photo Biz Exposed with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Just before we close out today's episode, you probably know that it is November. Certainly if you're listening to the podcast episode as it goes live. And November is usually the month of specials because of Black Friday. What used to be just a weekend of specials seems to be getting bigger and longer every single year. And it's no different with PhotoBizX because it makes life so much easier for me. So if you are a premium member, if you check out the members version of today's episode, the full-length version with Emma, you'll find in the show notes there that I've got links to where you can access the PhotoBizX premium membership for 40% off. So you can access or sign up to a 12-month membership for $120, which is half the monthly membership price if you're currently paying $20 per month. So head over there to the show notes, click on the link, sign up for the 12-month membership for $120, then go in and cancel your existing $20 payments via your PayPal dashboard. I can help you do that if you get stuck. And here's what else I'm going to do if you are a premium member. If you've just paid or are due to pay $20 for your monthly membership in the month of November, sign up for the 12-month membership and I'm going to refund that $20 payment that you made this month. So this is really only beneficial for you if you are on the $20 per month membership level at the moment. So again, head over to the show notes, sign up for the 12-month membership, go in and cancel your existing $20 payments inside your PayPal account. And if you've already paid $20 in the month of November, let me know via email. It's andrew@photobizx.com. And let me know the email address associated with your PayPal account so I can go in and refund that $20. Now, if you're already on the $120 plan, the special 12-month plan, then you don't need to do a thing. It'll automatically roll over. You stay on that fantastic price. There's nothing more for you to do. You stay on that price once you've signed up for it. Now, of course, I've got something for you if you are already on that membership. I've got the Facebook Ads course on special. It's the cheapest it's ever been. Well, when I say that, since we had the opening special a couple of years ago when we launched the course, but it's at a fantastic price. It's $97 right now. That's going to be available to you this month as a premium member. And I've also got the online sales course on a massive special as well. So details for all those are inside the show notes for today's episode with Emma O'Brien. So make sure you get into the show notes in the members area for today's episode to access the links to make use of those specials. If you've got any questions at all, email me. It's andrew@photobizx.com. I want to make sure you are getting the best prices, the best value, the best bang for your buck in regards to your PhotoBizX premium membership. Alrighty, that is it for me for this week. Hope you have a fantastic week. I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.